Welcome to the Diverse Minds podcast, where we give you the tips, tools, and techniques you need to be a mentally healthy and inclusive leader. Each week, you'll hear about a variety of topics linked to mental health, well-being, and diversity that will enhance both your professional practice and personal well-being. Welcome to the 294th episode of the award-winning Diverse Minds podcast, and welcome back to the show. Last time in episode 293, we discussed why slashing EDI budgets is not a good idea. So don't forget, if you haven't had a chance to listen to that, you might like to go back and check that out. The next two episodes will focus on disability to celebrate Disability History Month. Don't forget, the podcast is now fortnightly, but if you're missing weekly content, you have 6 years worth of episodes to listen and reflect back on. And if you want my handy guide that lists the episodes with a clickable link, you can get it at bit.ly/DMPG23. So UK Disability History Month, UKDHM, is an annual event creating a platform to focus on the history of the struggles of disabled peoples for equality and human rights. There's been a steady increase in interest and activity since the month began in 2010. And do check out the ukdhm.org website for more information, and that link is also in the show notes. This year's theme is disability, life and death, and particularly important because this year the value of disabled people's lives, as per DHM website, has been severely questioned. They talk about the assisted dying bill making its way through Parliament and how it directly challenges Article 10 of the UNCRPD. And nearly every person with a lifelong impairment will recite tales of how doctors have told them and their parents they would not live, walk, be educated, and many such value judgments. And yet the UK's history is full of disabled people who have received such dire warnings, have gone on to live incredibly worthwhile and transformative lives for themselves and for society. So this year is about providing disabled people with the adjustments and access they need, but most of all, it's about challenging disabling attitudes and practices that still persist. So I think this is, you know, it's always a great theme because it's what people decide. But thinking about life and livelihood, I wanted to specifically focus then on the Lilac Review. And you may have heard of the Lilac Review, but you may not have done. And the Lilac Review was an independent review looking at tackling the inequality faced by disabled founders and aiming to level up entrepreneurial activity and opportunity across the UK. It was spearheaded by Small Business Britain. It was launched in February 2024, and the final report was published in May 2025. And it looks at really identifying the barriers faced by disabled founders in the UK. And the idea for this report was to develop an action plan to remove them. So for once, we don't just have a report that sits there and no one does anything. And I'm going to be talking about the actions that have been taken as a result. But let's look at the current picture as outlined by the Lilac Review. So 25% of the nation's 5.5 million small to medium enterprise business owners are disabled or have a health condition, with UK disabled entrepreneurs accounting for 8.6% of the turnover of all UK businesses. So that is significant. Disabled founders experience 30% lower employment, £570 more monthly costs, and far fewer role models. And 33% of disabled entrepreneurs start their business out of necessity, not choice. Now, this really does dovetail with what I found when I carried out some research in November 2023 for Clearview Research. And well done to them. They've just won a big award. So well done, Kami Imifadon, who's their founder, which looked at established disabled entrepreneurs, what their barriers were, how they were able to run their business, what the barriers they experienced when they were running their business. Some of them were transitioning out of running businesses to retirement, and what advice they would give. Then you can hear more about what I found out in episode 224, and that's Barriers for Disabled Entrepreneurs. So it was really great to see this report being launched in February and then the report being released in May. And I've been thinking about it a lot, and so I'm pleased I get to talk about it. And as someone currently non-disabled, I have to say that I am very vested in this from work I've done in workplaces with disabled staff, also having worked for Hatch Enterprise in the social enterprise world for a year. That's, you know, this is something that I do feel strongly about, and being having a micro business myself and thinking about equity, equality, and opportunities. So the idea is that the Lilac Review represents a move towards bringing down barriers and championing disabled entrepreneurs. And this was seen as a very welcome step forward for all the organizations involved. But of course, it doesn't really solve the huge discrepancies between disabled and non-disabled entrepreneurs. And of course, we may see disabled entrepreneurs who are a global majority, who are single parents, who are also caring for other people, younger and older dependents. So we and multiple disabilities, single disabilities, there's so much complexity there from well-resourced backgrounds, poorly resourced backgrounds. But the idea is that at least we're starting to talk about it and moving the sector in a positive direction. And I had a look at some disabled entrepreneur websites, and most of them really welcomed the report and the actions resulting from it. So you might think, well, I'm not an entrepreneur. I don't work in social enterprise sector. Why do I really care about this? But I think this is the thing it goes back to, and I don't think this should be the sole driver, but especially given the times we're living in, it's always about economic potential and what's going on economically. So if we look at that, disabled entrepreneurs are 25% of small businesses, but are only able to generate 8.6% of turnover, which I still think is really significant. But this word still was sort of mentioned in things that I was reading. But if we could empower and enable systems to support them better, this could add another 230 billion to UK revenue. So for people who are thinking economically, and we know that getting disabled people who want to work and have the skills, want to express those skills in employment, they might not want to be entrepreneurs. This is also going to add to UK revenue. I don't think that should be the primary reason for doing it. I think obviously it's a very clear reason for doing it, but the primary reason is, why do we want people not to utilize their skills and talents, and be a part of society in the way that they choose to be? Significant barriers are also another issue, and we know that there are lots of barriers in the workplace when people know what they need for workplace adjustments and yet are not given them. So disabled people face higher costs, lack of funding, inaccessible support, and there is a constant burden of proof to constantly say that again. There is a constant burden of proof for disabled people to prove that they have a disability. And we see this in the workplace. Managers and people pulling the private information, private medical information, private history into the public. Actually, all we need to know is, what are the adjustments that you need in the workplace, and how do we review them and make sure they're fit for purpose? Social equity, if we think about leveling the playing field and ensuring disabled people have the same opportunities to start and grow businesses as non-disabled people. And then I also think it's imperative, and this wasn't in the report that I could see, but to look at the intersectional dimension of this, because we also know that women are only get 3% of VC funding if you want VC funding, and then we start to look at all the other characteristics, these numbers start to go down. So for government and policymakers, if we think about, why do we need to care about the Lilac Review, this really does help implement reforms for inclusive growth. And we're always going on about growth, and we had the budget, and I nearly did an episode about the budget inequity, but I actually, this is the first year I listened to the budget live, the autumn budget. Yeah, it was an interesting experience on the radio. I've always read about it. I've always looked into what the results were, but I listened to it live this year, and I did have some strong thoughts myself, but perhaps that's another episode. Financial institutions, so to provide accessible funding. And of course, we know that when businesses are invested into, they make money that goes back into the economy. Business support organizations, so to offer inclusive, easy to navigate help. And one of the barriers mentioned in the report was also around networking and opportunities for mentoring. So this is something that came up in the interviews that I did, and how it was very difficult to get to networking events physically, but also the timing. One of the founders I talked to, she was caring for younger and an older dependent, so she really couldn't leave the house. She was only able to leave the house to take her younger dependents to school. So again, this came up in the Lilac Review, and we know that unlocking potential benefits everyone. And looking at the point around tech, for example, text messages were invented by deaf community, by deaf inventor for deaf people to communicate, but we all text all the time. So this is the thing, innovation is when we do something positive for a group of people that experience barriers, it often removes barriers and creates innovation and opportunities for everyone. I would say definitely more often than not. So the issues that we see are, there's definitely a lack of visibility, around choice, around people, disabled people to become entrepreneurs. They are the super celebrities like Paralympians, or completely invisible. And I think that is something that absolutely needs to change. There is, as I said, a lack of focus on investment opportunities for disabled entrepreneurs. You can't get a loan if you are on universal credit, seen as very risky. Managing your own needs, access to work has been, it's in a very difficult situation. The waiting lists are really, really long. So if there's more support and easy to access support and information from a business perspective, that's very, very helpful. In the research that I did, 84% said that they do not have equal access to the same opportunities and resources as non-disabled entrepreneurs. So there wasn't, you know, it was a difficult one. And disabled entrepreneurs have only 0.1% share of voice in the public sphere, despite disabled people being the largest underrepresented group in the world and over 20% of the population of the UK. Because if you look at the definition of disability, it does include health conditions. It does include HIV AIDS from the point of diagnosis, cancer from the point of diagnosis, mental ill health conditions. People may not identify as disabled, but they would come under the Equality Act's definition of that. And just 16.7% of disabled entrepreneurs said that they are treated equally to non-disabled entrepreneurs in investment opportunities. So if we can't get it right in a space that's meant to be freer, more open, not as constrained as the workplace, we are getting it wrong in the whole of society. We know this. I mean, there's a lot of evidence to show this. But this is why I think the LILAC review and what they found and the actions they've taken are applicable beyond the entrepreneurial space. I really hope you're enjoying the content of this podcast. And if you want to keep up to date, then why not join my newsletter? When you join my mailing list, you'll receive my white paper on inclusive language and mental health at work. And that link is bit.ly/ILMHCK. So what's been the result of the LILAC review and how will it make systemic change to equalize the entrepreneurial space? Well, first of all, there's now a disability finance code. And the disability finance code for entrepreneurship is designed to create meaningful engagement between disabled entrepreneurs and the financial services sector in the UK. And again, I think when you do things like that, hopefully, and some financial sector, they're very far ahead in this actually, but we'll start to go, oh, we're doing this for our beneficiaries, our service users, our customers. Oh, actually, what's going on for staff? Are we making sure that staff have what they need? So it does have a double impact often. So this has been developed in collaboration with the Department for Business and Trade, the LILAC Review Steering Board, British Business Bank and UK Finance. And the code aims to break down barriers and increase access to finance for disabled-led businesses. It's supported by a number of leading institutions and founding signatories who are committed to delivering the changes and making progress to open up opportunities for disabled entrepreneurs. So in essence, what does the code say? Firstly, it's about implementing inclusive design principles. So continuing to apply and improve inclusive design principles to all products and services, adhering to good practice guidance. So that would also link to universal design. Disabled founders by offering accessible and practical support for disabled founders, such as mentoring, networking events, finance, readiness education, and business planning. And lenders should also consider setting up targeted activities for disabled entrepreneurs. Now, I do think this is brilliant, and I do think mentoring is part of it. But what I would have loved to have seen here, and you might have heard me say it before, is that we need to see more sponsorship. So I think that people from any underrepresented group that face barriers, they don't necessarily need mentoring. What they need is someone to go, no, this isn't acceptable. We need to change the status quo and this is how we're going to do it. Or I know a really good person for this steering group. I know a really good person we need to speak to around lived experience and this is who it is. So we're moving away from the usual suspects and people who have systemic advantage and power in terms of aligning with the way society is currently set up can push forward those changes. So I would have really liked to have seen sponsorship in there, actually. I think mentoring is a very easy go-to and it makes people feel good. Sponsoring is you have to put your head above the parapet, which is why I think we see it less. Third point then is actively sharing evidence. So showcasing disabled entrepreneurs who have successfully accessed banking products and services to build and grow their businesses. And finally, activity supporting disabled colleague representation. So actively supporting the representation of disabled colleagues in an organization. So my point about employees, which is really important. And you can have a look at that. That's on the LILAC Review website as well. The second thing in terms of action is there has been a disability trade framework. And this is to open up existing contracts, including government contracts, to disabled founders. Now, we know there's been a lot of discussion about this, and there had been some reforms around small businesses being able to tender for big government contracts. I'm guessing that this is sort of tangential and part of that. So that is really good news. But the tendering processes are a nightmare. I don't do them because they're so onerous and I'd need a team of 8 people to help me. So I think, again, if you have a bigger business, it's probably going to be easier. But I'm really pleased to see that. And actually, if disabled founders are prioritized specifically for products, services that are, you know, created by, co-produced by disabled people, and the product is absolutely designed by, disabled business, go for it. I think that's brilliant news. And then finally, and I was really excited about this, is the Lilac Centre for Disabled Entrepreneurship, which will be the UK's first flagship business incubator and research centre dedicated to advancing the success of disabled entrepreneurs. And something that came up in the research I did in 2023 was, and this is slightly different, but talking about, you've got A-levels, you've got apprenticeship routes, but actually, why don't we have specific incubators for 16 plus? This is different because it's based at Anglia Ruskin University, but I think that would be brilliant. And so people will work on two years, and this could be prioritized. Disabled people could be prioritized to work and develop a business. I think that would be brilliant. And maybe they could do A levels alongside it, or they could do one A level and work on an incubator, this adaptable model. But with a hybrid physical and virtual model hosted at ARU Peterborough and Small Business Britain, the centre will champion innovation, leadership, and inclusive enterprise. So it's going to be hosted by Small Business Britain, a nationally accessible online platform with learning, networking, mentoring, and resources. Again, I wish we could see the word sponsorship there, and AI-driven personalization for access needs and learning preferences. So another big thing that came up in the report was about AI and using AI specifically for various disabilities and how people want to work with, how disabled communities, entrepreneur communities want to work with AI. So I think that's a, for me, that's a really interesting thing, and probably we're going to learn a lot from that. So I am really pleased to see the momentum and some change around barriers, systemic change. And I've seen many disabled entrepreneurs embracing the report. So I had a look and saw some opinions. I think the key challenge is still in society. We don't have a societal, positive societal approach to disabled people. We've had some horrible things around disability benefits cuts, the horrible rhetoric, people just being really vitriolic about that, general citizens, the lack of support in workplaces for workplace adjustments, work needs assessments, not understanding that, access auditing, that still, there's a huge mountain to climb there. The ongoing cost of managing a disability, it does cost a significantly larger amount. So on average, disabled people face an additional £1,000, if not more, a month in costs due to what Scope calls the disability price tag. That's before setting up a business. Fear of losing essential benefits, because it can be, if you make a profitable business or you have a business, you make a little bit of profit, your benefits get cut. So that's a huge issue. Potential future gaps in productivity due to health conditions, but also waiting lists, not having specialists. It's really important that there's a whole societal approach to this. So I think the lesson that can be learned here is that workplaces, when you do research or when you find some information or you read research, you can also take action. Because yes, we're talking about disabled entrepreneurship, but you've heard the stats from the report, from other sources. This is a serious issue. And of course, like myself, not disabled, but today's workers are tomorrow's entrepreneurs. Many of us have side hustles. We want to do things differently. So by enabling people to do this, we're benefiting individuals, we're benefiting organizations. There's also intrapreneurship. There's also the way in which when people leave an organization, if they were supported by it, we'll sing their praises, we'll go back and do things in a voluntary capacity, we'll be an ambassador for you. So it all ties in. And we've also looked at the productivity and the increase to UK turnover in general. So I really hope you've enjoyed this episode. And if you're looking to foster a positive wellbeing culture and would like guidance on creating strategies tailored to your team's needs, then don't forget I'm here to support you. Do reach out to explore training, consultancy, and coaching services designed to build healthy, resilient workplace culture. So do get in touch with me at Leyla, L-E-Y-L-A, at diverseminds.co.uk. And don't forget to leave me a review if you enjoyed the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcast from. And you're very welcome to leave me a voice note anonymously or with your name on SpeakPipe, and that link is bit.ly/spkptmp. And don't forget my TEDx talk, where I talk about my experience of navigating workplace politics, the connection between culture, race, and mental health, something you can watch in your break as it's just 12 minutes long, and that link is bit.ly/TEDx Wolves, WOLVESLO. And don't forget to connect with me on LinkedIn and Facebook. And the resources for today's episode are the UK Disability History Month website, the Lilac Review, and episode 224, Barriers for Disabled Entrepreneurs. So take care, everyone, and I hopefully will catch you in the next episode. And bye for now.
Thanks for listening to the Diverse Minds podcast. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you access your podcasts from. You can also connect with me on Facebook and LinkedIn. Tune into next week's episode of the podcast, where I'll bring you more insights on mental health and inclusion. Bye for now.